How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
What up? It's the Crossover Pod Friday edition. I'm Howard Beck, senior writer for Sports Illustrated. It's been a glorious week in the association. The conference finals are underway. I'm out in San Francisco, one of my favorite places on earth, covering Warriors Mavericks. What could be better? Oh, and we had the draft lottery, my favorite event on the NBA calendar, my favorite contrivance on the NBA calendar. All those prolonged moments of kind of fake suspense on the Brock. I mean, it's real suspense, right? The people on the dais don't know. We don't know. But of course, the whole lottery has already happened behind the scenes. I don't know. The whole thing is just, it's great TV. It's fun. I love the lottery. My co-host Chris Mannix was in the actual lottery draw room where the ping pong balls were in the hopper and all the numbers unfurling. You can read his behind-the-scenes account at SI.com of how it actually happened. And then our colleague Jeremy Wu, our resident draft expert, is my guest on the pod today. He was in Chicago as well for the lottery and is covering the Combine this week. Jeremy's got a new mock draft up at SI.com. He's been scouting these guys all season and has great insight into the top prospects, as he always does. So go check out his piece, which we will discuss pieces of on the pod today. The Magic are the big winners. They get the number one pick. What direction should they be going? Is it Jabari Smith, Chet Holmgren, Paolo Banchero? What are the Thunder going to do at number two? What are the Thunder going to do, period? Like, how many years are they going to be in their own version of the process, and how patient is Shai Gilgeous-Alexander going to be? Are they going to get immediate help at number two? Will they trade it? Will Presti cash it out for like 17 more draft picks? We'll see. We discuss all of that on the pod today. And also some intrigue down further. The Blazers at seventh. What are they going to do to get Dame Lillard the help he needs right now? Are they actually rebuilding? Is he actually in for that rebuild? Just some quandaries for them. Quandaries, I think, for the Kings, too. Lots of great draft chatter and insights with Jeremy on all of that. Before we get to it, a quick reminder. Please rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter, at Howard Beck. Okay, all the great draft intel coming up next with Jeremy Wu, so stick around.
This is The Crossover, an NBA show hosted by Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
It's a whole new level for you and me, Chris, this relationship.
Like and subscribe for the best weekly NBA content these two are capable of.
What does that mean?
Could be the best duo ever.
I don't see how you can beat that.
Here they are, Chris Mannix and Howard Beck.
Now, very pleased to be joined by my colleague and SI's resident draft guru, Jeremy Wu from Chicago. Jeremy, how are you, sir?
What's up, man? I'm good. You know, this week there's always like something going on, but I'm fortunate that I live a walking distance from the combine where they do it, so it makes my life a lot easier rather than having to, when I used to have to fly here, and then I'd stay with I grew up here, so I'd stay at my family's place and I'd be Ubering back and forth. I don't have to do any of that this year.
Very nice of the NBA, very courteous of them to move the entire lottery apparatus and the combine within walking distance of you. That's it's very courteous of the NBA.
Yeah, it was per my request, actually.
So we're recording this on Thursday, so things are going to wrap up by the time people listen to the pod. But the lottery, the draft order is set. You were there. Our own Chris Mannix was in the room where it happened, watching the lottery balls do their thing. You were on the outside covering the public version of it. And it's already been kind of an interesting week. What did you pick up, whether at the lottery itself or in the combine stuff itself so far this week? Any interesting buzz around the gym with players or teams? Anything you're particularly keeping an eye on as this winds down?
Yeah. Well, I'll say, like, I think the lottery itself, everyone kind of agrees, was like a fairly tame result by like recent standards, you know, with the changing of the odds to make it, you know, as you know, more even and fair for, you know, bad teams to have a real chance to move up. You know, only Sacramento moved up. Detroit went down to 5. Sacramento was up at 3. Obviously, Orlando won, and OKC went up at 2. And Houston at 3. So, like, most of the teams that we expected and we're hoping to have early picks wound up with those. You know, that was not as chaotic as it could have been. I think a lot of people are definitely wondering, like, what Oklahoma City is going to do at 2. Obviously, I don't think it's like done, but the general assumption I am hearing, most people agree, they think Orlando will take Jabari Smith, who is our top prospect. You know, that's what I would do if I were them. So it doesn't shock me that that's what people think, but, you know, we'll see what happens with that. But, you know, a lot of chatter about what OKC will do, you know, whether or not, you know, if Chet Holmgren is there, if he will be their guy, or if they'll take Paolo Banchero. I think those are the two guys. But, you know, Oklahoma City, no one really knows what they're ever thinking. So it's all, we're all guessing. and I would say, I think the other interesting thing is just, you know, Shaedon Sharpe, who, you know, was, you know, at Kentucky this year, but did not play, but is looking like a top 5 or 6 pick. You know, he had his pro day on Monday, which, you know, these pro days are, I think most people around the NBA would agree, like, kind of a waste of time, but, you know, he did some impressive stuff in the workout where you can just kind of see, and I've seen him play before, but he's such a good athlete and a good shooter, and he can create space off the dribble. So I think he's kind of creating some buzz as to, you know, how high can he go, particularly having not played, you know, like there's one segment of people who's like, yeah, I wouldn't do it anyway. I'm afraid, you know, that, you know, it's not going to be what you think. He doesn't have any college film, right? But then also people, I've heard the argument, just it's too much upside at a certain point, you know, in a type of draft like this, where it's, you know, I would say like the stratification of the talent is not as pronounced maybe as some years. You know, you could argue for him, like someone said, well, would OKC take him at 2? And it's like, probably not. But again, these are the type of things that everyone's wondering, those type of speculative things. So, you know, he's probably the name that I'm most curious to kind of see how this pre-draft shakes out.
Before we dive into some of the prospects and the draft order as it sits now, who's likely to go where, Jeremy has a mock draft, of course, the latest mock draft up post lottery results on SI.com. So people should go check that out for all of this. But before we get into that, I'm curious, like, was there any buzz about the lottery odds themselves and the new system? You alluded to this, but, you know, they changed the lottery odds starting in the 2019 draft. That was the year the Pelicans jump up from 7th to 1 to get Zion. That year, the Suns, Cavaliers, and Knicks had the best shared odds. They all had 14% chance of getting number one pick. That was the first year of the flatter lottery odds. And all three of them ended up falling. And there was this thought that, oh, this is working exactly as it's supposed to. If this is an anti-tanking measure and you could be 7th and jump up to 1, and if you're the first, second, or third worst and you fall back, that's disincentive to lose intentionally. But what we had this year, in year 4 of the new lottery odds, Orlando won the number one pick with the second worst record. The Thunder got the number two pick from the fourth worst record, so they did jump up a little bit. The Rockets had the worst record and got the 3rd overall pick. So the only team that lost out in a way was Detroit. They had the 3rd worst record but fell back to 5th because Sacramento jumped from 7 to 4. This lottery in particular this year still ended up awarding the teams that were presumably tanking. I think everybody agrees the Thunder were tanking. The Magic is always a fine line between whether they're tanking or just can't get their shit together. The Rockets, ever since Harden and Westbrook forced their way out, have been kind of in a passive tanking almost, because they didn't choose for those guys to leave. They're picking up the pieces. But I don't, you know, the odds are the odds. The ping pong ball is going to fall the way they fall. But I don't know that the flatter odds are proving to actually be an anti-tanking measure based on, you know, 4 years of results, or certainly this year's results. Any buzz from the executives out there in Chicago?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I don't think it's going to discourage tanking, but it does make it harder to tank and just like know that you're going to get number one. Like, obviously it was imperfect, but I think, you know, I think some people are always grumbling. Some people are like, whatever. Some people hate the lottery completely. You know, like I'm sure you've heard these different opinions too, as far as the randomness of it. But I do think that, I think it's just better, at least that, you know, from a team further down, and also, you know, not just jumping top three, but now jumping top four, right? I think that was the other thing that they did,
yeah.
If I'm correct, right? Like being able to jump, you know, expanding those positions that you can get to. I think it just creates a little bit more parity. And it also, like, I think from the perspective of, like, the shameless tanking, we did see Portland and Indiana both lose, like, 10 or 11 games each to end the season. But, like, so that's not going anywhere. But I do think that it, like, to some degree makes it more difficult to, you know, go for a certain spot. And if you're splitting hairs, like, it doesn't really matter if you're 7th or 8th, like, not that much. Like, you know, I haven't heard anybody, you know, grumbling too much about the way that it's done. So I'm okay with it. Like, just from my perspective, I think it is a little bit more fair. I like the, you know, idea that it's a little bit more random. But I also think that it's going to be really interesting. The other kind of thing sort of pertaining to the tanking, it's definitely not going to stop because the buzz about next year is kind of already going around too with Victor Wembanyama, who, you know, unless he is injured or something crazy were to happen in the next 12 months, like, is going to be the number one pick next year, presuming he's healthy. And, you know, the teams that are bad right now are going to probably be cool being bad one more year just to make sure they have a chance to get him, right? So, like, yeah. That's probably the other thing that, you know, once he's off, you know, in the NBA, then we'll see if there's anyone really worth taking for. But I think he's also probably, like, the shady, like, shadowy figure in the background, like, hanging over everybody being bad. It's like everyone knows this guy is coming to.
Yeah. No, he's, from everything I hear about him and from the, you know, brief YouTube clips I've seen of Wembanyama, he's going to inspire a whole new round of tanking. Like, it's going to be like 2014 all over again, or 2013, whenever we started the true tanking era, the process era, Sixers, whatever, and when teams were all chasing. Like, it's going to be like that again, right? Like, it's, and it doesn't matter that the lottery odds are flatter. It's the teams that are bad are still going to want to be as bad as possible. Even if it's only 14% chance of winning, they're still going to do it. So I don't know that we fixed anything. Maybe it's a little bit better than it was a few years ago, but, I'm not sure that the new lottery odds fixed anything. I think the play-in tournament and people chasing 9th and 10th late in the season has actually done more to discourage at least that version of tanking, late season tanking, the pull the plug type stuff that you were talking about with Indy and Portland, than teams that just go into a season knowing they're bad and are in fact absolutely playing to be one of the three worst so that they can get the best odds. But we'll see.
Yeah. No, I think the only way to really get rid of tanking would be to have relegation. but I don't think we're getting that. The four way mad ants are not coming to the Central Division anytime soon.
No, as fun as that would be. I mean, I still love Mike Zarin's wheel, but nobody else aside from Mike Zarin and me like the wheel. So people can go Google Mike Zarin's wheel if you want to know what that is. All right. So this draft class, always various opinions out there in assessing these guys. But give me your assessment, Jeremy, of just the depth of this draft class. And when I say depth, I mean like franchise changers, not necessarily like superstars, but just like basically how many teams walked away happy with their position on Tuesday? How deep does the talent go that's actually like, okay, we will be really happy on draft night that we got this guy?
Yeah, for sure. You know, after kind of digging into this for a while, I think there are probably like, I'd say for me, 10 or 11, maybe 10 is probably the safer way to say. There are probably 10 players who I think are like very good prospects and in any draft would be considered, you know, lottery level, you know, to varying degrees, and people would be happy to walk away with. Like, I think, you know, I talked to some of the teams that were kind of in that position, sort of like back part of the lottery, and they're like, yeah, you know, we're happy. Like, hey, you know, if we stay here, we still feel like we're going to get a stud. Like, we're not so worried about it. You know, if we jumped up to the top four, it actually creates more, you know, problems in some ways. Like, maybe you don't love 2, 3, 4, and you know, if you were to go from like 10 or 9, whatever, to two or three, four, and you don't love any of those guys, you know, then it creates the, you know, some, a more difficult decision to make. Whereas if you're sitting there and you just know someone is going to fall out of that group, you know, 8, 9, 10, it's probably cool. Right. So like, it's kind of an interesting way to think about it. Obviously you want the better prospects, but in terms of just like the optics of like having to make a tough call or having to like, you know, have a more expensive rookie that you don't necessarily believe in, you know, like these types of things are very like situational. So, you know, I do think there are probably 10 guys that I feel really good about. So that would be my answer to that. And, you know, Jabari Smith has been my number one guy. I think, you know, I think he's a guy who would be a number one pick contender in most drafts. I don't know if I would say that about anyone else in this draft, including the other guys who are contenders for the number one pick. So that's my opinion. But I think he, you know, has something special, you know, with the way that he shoots it at his size and, you know, being able to guard all over the floor and just being a really special prospect just from like a pure like love of the game standpoint. Like he's a very, very like, you know, I did a story on him for our site early in the season, and he's just like a very like pure spirit, like loves basketball, and I like that about him. So
that it's funny because it's one of those things where you don't I don't know if fans often understand, like there's a difference in when you're any of these prospects coming in, there's all the basic requisite skills that everybody's being assessed on and that we obsess about, and people's athleticism and their natural gifts and everything else. The love of the game thing probably isn't talked about enough, and it is such a defining thing about in the NBA who actually has great careers, even if their ceiling is lower based on, you know, physical tools or whatever else. Like, it's interesting to hear when a guy's like one of his defining traits is actually loving basketball, because it's kind of important at the end of the day. And a lot of guys, I you hate to say it, but there's a certain percentage of NBA players who are there just because they can be, because they have the requisite talent, skills. They like the money. They like the lifestyle. They don't necessarily love the game. And sometimes you can't tell until deeper into their career, but it's something teams, I think, are you know, have to be tuned into. So it's interesting that that is one of the things that makes Jabari Smith stand out. But I want to ask you about how he kind of becomes this, I feel like, consensus number one now in a draft where I kept hearing there was no clear number one. There was a lot of Chet Holmgren fascination earlier in the year and a sense that he was the definite number one. Then I heard Banchero a lot, and I'm hearing this, you know, I'm the outsider to this process, right? Like, I am not a draft expert and I'm not a obsessive draft watcher. I'm too consumed with the NBA. But as I'm checking in and out of these discussions over the course of the season, it really felt like it was Holmgren for quite a while. And then for a while, maybe even Banchero and Smith was somewhere in the discussion. But I did a quick glance around all of the mock drafts coming out of the lottery the other night. You've got Jabari Smith, Chad Ford, Jabari Smith, Jonathan Givony, Jabari Smith, Jay Billis, Jabari Smith, Eddie Katz, Jabari Smith, Sam Vecenie, Jabari Smith. So almost every major site that has a draft expert has all come to the same conclusion. Although Kevin O'Connor, KOC over at The Ringer, has got Banchero at number one. And I saw Ricky O'Donnell at SB Nation has Banchero number one. When did Jabari Smith, if I'm even framing this right, when did Jabari Smith kind of push his way past Holmgren and Banchero for you and seemingly for a consensus of draft watchers out there?
Yeah, sure. So like, this is kind of the short story for me. You know, I came into the season with Banchero at number one. Basically I had not seen Jabari play in high school in person. I knew about him. I had heard different things from scouts who had, you know, went gone to the Auburn pro day or whatever, like, this guy's going to be a top pick, but we don't know like where. You know, he might not, we don't know what he's going to average. Like, it's hard to say because he's so young. Right. So like, I think that's a factor. And also him being young is a big, you know, factor. You know, he's, I think, 6 months or so younger than Banchero, and he's literally a whole year younger than Holmgren. Like, they're both May birthdays in different years. So to me, that's pretty significant. I was watching several Auburn games in November because it became obvious that he was very interesting. And then I was like, oh God, like, I need to speed this up and go see him. You know, I've been planning to go and down there in January. I was like, I got to do it faster. So I changed my entire schedule around to go to Atlanta to watch him play. Auburn was playing in they played in Nebraska, I believe. And so I went to that game, and I'm there, and I'm watching him shoot around, like, just by, you know, before the game, warming up for 10 minutes. I'm like, all right, this is probably the number one pick. Like, there are just not guys that size who shoot it as easily as he does and as consistently as he does. And it just comes out of his hand. So it's like mesmerizing to watch the way that he shoots it. you know, then you see the rest of the stuff he does. He's so polished in some ways, but also so raw in other ways. To me, that's exciting. That's sort of like how I'd put it. Like, if, you know, you can get better as a ball handler, but like, anyway, I think, like, back to your question. So immediately after seeing him, then I put him number one on our site. And I don't mean this in a way, like, pat myself on the back, but like, I don't think the other sites, I do like keep an eye on that sometimes. I don't think anyone else really changed heavily until like just now. There was like gradual changing of, I don't really know. I don't mean that in a way where it's like trying to sound competitive. I don't really care, but like,
no, but it's sometimes it does evolve, right? Like the consensus kind of evolves over the course of weeks and months.
Right. But I will say that like, based on what I was hearing from, you know, the people who I trust most in terms of like guys who evaluate talent around the NBA, you know, in varying roles, you know, there was a lot, just very, very, a lot of strongly Jabari talk in December. So that was where I landed then. And I never really like changed it. The only reason, and I guess, we'll, you know, this can get us into talking about Thunder, but like the only thing that I thought might not take him number one, or at least I'd have to think about what would it do, is OKC, because they're just so hard to read. Right. Again, Orlando may not take him number one, but that is kind of where we all landed. So I think that probably says something too.
What do you think of you know, we immediately start obsessing over things like fit, which is, I feel like, very rarely relevant for teams at the top of the draft anyway, because they mostly just need talent, period. But if the Magic do take Jabari Smith, what do you see? What do you see him being on day one for them? And to the extent that they don't really like, they've got some interesting young talent, but they don't have a franchise star. There's nobody really, I always say, like, in the NBA, until you have somebody to build around who makes everybody else make sense, who makes your role players actually look better than they are, like, you're nowhere until you've got that guy. So a collection of interesting young guys is very rarely a path to anything. What would he do in terms of making the rest of their roster make sense and actually start to raise their floor?
Sure. Yeah. So I think, like, if you look at, you know, Orlando is an interesting case because they do have a lot of young guys, and traditionally they have been okay to like, they draft a lot of guys and just kind of be patient and kind of see how it filters out. Like, they're not a team that like frantically trades talent, really. Like, they're not going to just bail on a guy. Although I do think, you know, in some cases that has backfired. If you look at, you know, when they took Mo Bamba, but he was kind of stuck behind Vucevic, then he didn't really pan out, and there was no way to know what he was going to be because he wasn't getting enough minutes, and we didn't know, you know. And you know, now he's, they're starting to come around a little bit as he hits his free agency, right? So like, that timeline is interesting. But, and anyway, you know, with Jabari, I think if you look at the guys that they do have, what they don't have is like shooting, like elite shooters on that roster. And he is that. I think he will be, you know, I don't know if he shoots 40% on day one, you know, from three, but like, he'll probably get there, honestly, like, or close to it. Like, he'll be a very, very high potential shooter, I think, in time. And if you look at, you know, what's on the team, you know, you got Wagner and you have, you know, Suggs, who I think, you know, everyone is hoping we'll see a little bit more out of him if he's healthy and he can kind of improve next season. And then, you know, there's also grumblings that they'll eventually move on from Jonathan Isaac just because he's never healthy. And, you know, they gave him a new deal, but like, I don't know how long he'll be there. You know, if they can find some, I don't know what they do with him. But I don't think the duplication of having him and Jabari would be an issue if they make that pick. So I think he makes them a much more versatile defensive team from day one. I think in the early part of his career, I think you'll see him use sort of like pick and pop type stuff, like get him easy touches, try to get him open jumpers, because he's going to make those at a high clip pretty much right away, I think, as long as he's, you know, that he's open. The tough ones he can make, it's going to take him a little more time to like, you know, make those at a high clip. He's going to have to continue to, you know, learn to expand his game off the dribble in terms of separating, but his shots are so hard to block. I just think like the margin for error for him is probably higher than most players in terms of like, how much separation do I need to get? Like, how complicated does my game need to be to score? You know, can he get to the rim more? Sure. But I think they can kind of play him all over the floor. They don't have to necessarily make him shoot 20 times a game right away. And, you know, he'll just, I think he'll make them better on both sides, and he'll space, and, you know, you let him kind of grow into, you know, I'm sure they will have him take some tough shots and sort of grow into those shots. You know, but the hope is probably by year two, year three, and particularly because he can fill out a lot physically. Like, he's, you know, he just turned 19. You look at his body, he's big, but he like has a lot more room to get stronger. And I think, you know, he's a guy who I think you'll probably see like take off like year two, year three, maybe not a rookie of the year. But again, you're drafting for the long run. So
yeah,
that's my thought. Yeah.
Yeah. So number two pick is going to be the Thunder. You've already made mention of this a couple times, that nobody ever knows what the Thunder is going to do. No one knows what Sam Presti's thinking. Sam's still sitting on a absurd pile of future draft picks. And you wonder, you know, if they go, whether it's for Chet Holmgren or Banchero or whatever they may do there, are they really playing for the present or the future? Are they still just biding time, waiting to make some massive trade involving a bunch of their picks and some of their players? But then again, you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander sitting there, who at some point might not want to, you know, keep playing this same game. Presti was quoted a couple months ago. I'm trying to remember when it was. No, I think it was actually, it might have been his exit interview after the season, where he sat for like 2 hours with local media, and much credit for doing so. And I think said something to the effect of, depending on how the season goes, that they, you know, they might be in the same place next season. Like, I think he was alluding to the idea that, like, if they can't quite figure it out, they're perfectly content to, like, have another year of pseudo tanking, outright tanking, whatever it is. Like, they don't mind playing it out another year, and with Victor Wembanyama on the board next year, maybe that's the better long play. But again, you do have a guy who could be a perennial all-star, maybe, if you were with a winning team in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And so I wonder what their urgency is. And based on that, I wonder, what does that do for, or how does that influence the guy that they might pick at two? And does it influence, how much does it influence whether that pick is actually just in play? You know, is it time for the Thunder to finally, you know, make that move to win in the present? The number two pick seems like it could be pretty valuable. What do you think of whether their best play is Holmgren and this continued slow build, and what your thoughts are on how long it'll be before Holmgren is really an impactful NBA player, and the quandary, I feel like the quandary that now faces the Thunder about present versus future?
Yeah, well, you know, I would fully expect them to be bad again, just because they're the team that I'm already hearing, like, most connected as far as, like, really wants Wembanyama. Obviously, that's, like, a year away. But it just, again, it says something about how good he is that we're talking about him just as much as any player in this draft already. But, you know, I do think that's probably on their mind. You know, I think it's an interesting question to ask, like, does how you draft this year impact, or is it impacted by the possibility of getting that guy next year? I don't think you can bank on it ever. But you have to keep in mind that if Thunder really want him, you know, say they wind up like fourth, they can still be like, hey, team that just won, like, we'll give you all 12 of these first round picks and this number four pick. And I mean, for maybe not Shai, but, you know, they can give, you know, basically make the most attractive offer ever in terms of draft picks, because they have so many draft picks. So if they want to do that and they think that's the guy, they can try. They still might hear a no, which is how good the guy is. But, you know, I think that's probably the nuclear option if they don't, you know, wind up where they want. So, like, you know, with regard to this pick, you know, I'm sure they'll make it. It's just a matter of, I think, how much do you believe in Holmgren? I think, you know, there's two ways of looking at it. Like, on one hand, you know, they are the most patient team. They can take the most risks. They can give Holmgren the most time and, like, developmental space to, you know, see what he can become and kind of stretch it. On the flip side, you know, they kind of tried that with Pokuševski, who is not as good a player as Chet, but, you know, it's kind of, there are definitely differing opinions as to what he will be. He's still very young, but another weird player. Like, they're not afraid to do that. But, you know, they have so much emphasis in, like, size on the perimeter. And I think Banchero is probably, everybody would probably agree that you can more confidently say that Banchero is going to be able to play on the perimeter. And Chet, you know, because he's a little bit slow-footed, like, he's super skilled, but it's just, like, I don't think he's going to, like, you know, take guys off the dribble and, you know, shoot pull-up jumpers and those types of things. Like, I just don't know that he'll do that. I think his application practically is more like a Porzingis, where, you know, he's heading the screen, he can pick and pop, you're hoping that he'll make some decisions as a passer, and can be that kind of, like, you know, great defensive player who also gives you a variety of looks on offense. But you know, I also wonder if Banchero, and also his, you know, the immediate production he's going to get, and I also wonder if, you know, I kind of go back and forth on this, but some of the concerns about Banchero's defense, like, is that overblown? Like, you know, he guards okay. He's just not going to be a rim protector, right? But I think you can argue that both ways for them at number two, if we assume Smith is gone. I think they're definitely going to be a fascinating team. And I put Chet there in the first mock, but like 10 minutes later, I was like, is that really what they're going to do? I'm still sort of trying to decide myself, like what I think will happen in that case.
How big a risk do you think Holmgren is? I mean, I know we get this, we go round and round in these things with these discussions about, like, you know, all right, there's the obvious, you can't teach size, and then you can't teach size with skill attached to it and rim protection and all these things that we know are very valuable. And at the same time, well, he's skinny. Okay, yeah, but he could grow into it. Well, not everybody does grow into it. Not everybody does pack on the extra muscle. Not everyone's bodies are built to do that. And we have a long history in the draft of, you know, teams getting, you know, getting obsessed with size early on in the draft process, or just feeling like I cannot pass this guy up because the value of a 7-footer with either rim protection or perimeter skills or some combination thereof in the modern era, it's an allure that's almost impossible to pass up. But we've got a long history of, you know, the Darko Milicic's and others, and it's not, you know. I get it. Holmgren will grow into his body. I get it. He's young. I understand all that. But man, at a glance, you look at him and it does feel like there's some risk involved here. How much risk do you think there is?
Yeah. I think I've been lower on him than the general consensus all season. I've seen all the top guys play multiple times. I saw Chet play twice, which is a little bit less than the other top guys, but you know, I've seen them all play a lot, so I'm very familiar. I just think, like, the first thing is that, you know, some people get mad online when you're like, oh, he's skinny. But it's like, I don't think that's a reductive thing. It's like, you have to talk about that, because the way that I've put it is, it's just, you know, it's his body type is like not only part of why he might fail, but also part of why he's so good, right? So it's like, you can't really take it out of how you talk about him, because you know, his length and his mobility is a plus, but then it's like, A, how much weight can he put on? B, do you want him to put on that much weight? Because if he loses his mobility, does that really reduce his chances of being impactful on defense, right? Because, like, right now we hope that he can switch a little bit and, you know, give you some type of defensive scheme versatility. But if he can't switch, if he's not quite quick-footed enough to, like, switch on to everybody, or at least situationally, and you're kind of having him drop back towards the rim and play a more conservative style, well, he's not like, again, he's big, but guys know that if you get into his body, you can bump him back, right? It's not like you're driving at Rudy Gobert and you're like, oh shit, like, what do I do? This guy's like suddenly right here and he's enormous. Like, it's not that type of body, right? So I think there's probably a differing opinion, you know, in terms of how good you think he'll be defensively, right? So, like, I think there is some risk in that if he's not like a totally monstrous interior defender, like, you might have to play him more like how the Bucks play Giannis, where he kind of roves around on the weak side and, you know, you guys can't see him, and then he comes and gets the ball because he has great timing. Like, I don't think he's going to be bad. Like, I don't think he's necessarily a bust. But the other thing, and this is not a Chet-specific issue, but, you know, I've been talking to teams about this too, is it's, you know, all mobile 7-footers come with injury risk just because of, you know, the stress that you're putting on your body. And, you know, Chet is, you know, to his credit, you know, plays more physically than you'd think. He's not afraid to, like, try to mix it up, but, like, he's not going to win a lot of those battles in the NBA. It's just, he's not, if he's 190 pounds, right? He's going to take hits, and, you know, again, he's fairly light in his feet, but it's something you have to think about, where, you know, this guy's not durable. And again, he's been healthy to this point, but he also hasn't played the type of schedule that, you know, he's going to play ever. So these are all factors. I do think there's risk. I think the most likely outcome is that he's not nothing. I think he's, you know, should be a starting caliber player who's like a plus. And I don't doubt Chet, like, as a guy, like, you know, I think he's got enough, you know, metal to him. And I do think he cares about basketball and he cares about being good. And everything about him is, you know, I haven't heard any issues on that front. But in a lot of games this year too, where he got hit, but, you know, by better teams and they were really physical with him, he kind of like went away offensively a little bit and he couldn't really like impose himself on the game. So, like, these are all factors. And I think there's a chance that he's, you know, good, but not great. And, you know, when you look at the upside of guys like Jabari Smith, who already has, like, you know, the incredible shooting tool, or, you know, Bankera, who is really, really skilled for a guy with that type of, like, build. He's kind of like a huskier, strong guy. And then, you know, Jaden Ivey, who's incredibly fast and also, you know, in some ways unpolished, but, you know, has the upside to be very, very difficult to corral in space. I think you can argue his upside maybe isn't, you know, higher than those guys. It just depends on how confident you feel and everything translating. And that's why it's such a tough discussion with him.
Yeah. Which means that obviously, you know, a lot of there's probably going to be some fluidity at the top of the board here. But at the moment, your mock, you have Banchero at the third overall pick after Holmgren and Smith. So Banchero to the Rockets, assuming that it falls this way. What do you think of Banchero with Jalen Green? And what are, you know, essentially, you know, what does it do for the Rockets trajectory?
Yeah, definitely. Right now, like, I'd be totally shocked if he made it past Houston. I just, you know, I've heard enough chatter like, hey, Orlando should take Banchero, or hey, OKC should take Banchero. Like, I think there's still definitely strong support for him. Like, people feel strongly that he's going to be impactful. I do think he would be a nice fit in Houston, just because obviously they have need for, like, interior help. You know, Şengün is interesting, but, like, I don't think he precludes you from taking Paolo, even if they're not a perfect fit. Like, you know, having a guy like him who can kind of be an interior playmaker, you know, he's, I think, a really good passer, which I think people know that, but maybe it hasn't been emphasized enough. Like, the passing is a huge part of his upside. And, you know, he sometimes can be a little bit like touch dominant, but he plays team basketball. And so I think having a guy like that to play with Green, who also kind of wants the ball in his hands, but is kind of learning to play without it. And then just another guy who teams have to account for, might have to double, and like just creates a little bit more space in different parts of the floor where they're not going to like, you know, occupy each other's preferred spots. I think that it makes a lot of sense. You know, if Green ever learns to, you know, really play pick and roll, you know, I think Banchero would be a pretty good partner for him. And the interesting thing about Banchero too is, you know, he can be a ball handler in the pick and roll. He's skilled enough to do that. So, you know, having a guy like that kind of opens up a lot of different things a creative coach can do, just because he's huge and very skilled. So, you know, I think he'd fit with Jalen. I'd rather fit him with Jalen than like a Jaden Ivey, who I think also really needs the ball to like become his best self. I think there's a way to like balance the touches when you have a big and a guard, who are both very, you know, potent scorers your teams have to account for. So I like to fit there in Houston if he gets there, but I'm not sure he'll be there at three. He might go at two.
Let's get through a few more here before I let you go so you can take your long commute over to to the combine. The Sacramento Kings. Poor Kings. So the Kings end up at fourth overall. You've got them taking Shaedon Sharpe of Kentucky. You mentioned him a little bit earlier. But also there's maybe a little bit of a quandary here just in terms of fit with De'Aaron Fox. I'm not a quandary, but just, you know, they seem to clearly be building around De'Aaron Fox now, having traded Tyrese Halliburton, a trade that everybody across the league, I think, is still shocked and baffled by. They are now about Fox and Sabonis, and I guess now everything should fit with them. If you're looking at this as a fit issue, which I think they are. Like, I don't think the Kings are in that mode of like just take best available. I feel like what they're doing when you make a move for Sabonis, they're in this kind of win now, find a way to maximize De'Aaron Fox mode. And I wonder, does that, you know, whether they're using the pick and taking maybe Shaedon Sharpe, as you suggest in your mock, or whether they're going a different direction, I wonder if they're going to trade it, Jeremy. Like, I wonder if the Kings, they clearly, they've now have the all-time record for, you know, whatever, 15, 16 years now without making the playoffs. There's clearly pressure. If there weren't that pressure, I don't think they make the Halliburton for Sabonis deal. So let's entertain that notion just for a minute. If they were going to trade the fourth overall pick, how valuable do you think it is? And you know, yeah, if they keep it, are they getting immediate help? Because I feel like that is what the Kings want right now.
Yeah, Sacramento is definitely, I think, the most interesting team, or one of the most interesting teams to monitor. I think everybody's curious because, like you said, there are a lot of different dynamics going into that. You know, I think it's clear that there is some directive from ownership, like, hey guys, like, if we make the playoffs, like, it's been a long time. You know, we know that Vivek is competitive. We know that he, you know, sometimes meddles and will have unorthodox things that they do as a result. But, you know, I put Sharpe there kind of as a placeholder. I don't know exactly what they'll do. But I also think that they've proven that, like you said, there's some level of concern about avoiding the duplication. You know, to trade Halliburton, obviously they felt like Fox with the guy, you know, whether that's because they love him or because they couldn't trade him. I think it's, you know, probably a few different things are here on that. Like, but I think they know that they're kind of Fox and Sabonis are going to be what they have to work with now. So, you know, I would think that probably precludes them from taking Jaden Ivey. Like, he doesn't really fit them. He won't be able to become his best self with Fox there, frankly. So, yeah, I mean, also knowing that, you know, if he's on the board or if it's, you know, Banchero or Holmgren, the odds of some team further down in the top 10 saying, hey, maybe we can come up and get, we love one of those guys. You know, someone, there definitely will be interest in that pick. Also because I think, you know, Detroit makes a lot of sense for Ivy. I would be surprised if he made it past five. So kind of knowing the stakes already about what will be there. I think, yeah, I expect them to take a lot of calls and explore that stuff. The other player who I'd watch at number four is Keegan Murray from Iowa, who would be more of a win now pick. He's older. You know, he's turned 22 later this year, but was also a late bloomer. And I think he has more upside than your typical, you know, older college prospect. Like, I don't think there's a risk of it turning into an Obi Toppin situation. Sorry, Knicks. So that's what I'd watch. Like, if they keep the pick, like, they could take Murray. They could take Sharp, who I think would have the upside, but it's also very risky in some ways. And, again, also a little bit ways away. Like, if you take him, it's not going to get you closer to the playoffs, right? So I think – the question is, you know, which of those dynamics kind of wins out for that pick, and definitely something that will be unresolved for some time, I think.
All right, let's drop down a little bit. The Blazers at seventh. The Blazers, man. So, rough season. Their worst in a very, very long time. Certainly their worst since Dame got there. Dame had the injury. He's presumably recovering or recovered. He was on the dais for the lottery, which was interesting because that would seem to suggest that Dame does not intend to demand a trade. I know he shames us for even suggesting it, but this is a logical discussion these days with where they are. They traded CJ McCollum. They, you know, there's not, you know, Simons is emerging, but like where, I don't know where the Blazers are right now. I don't know what they're, you know, what to expect from them next season. And, you know, Lillard's patience could run out at some point. Is there anybody that Dame should be excited about them getting at the seventh spot? Is the talent at seven good enough to make a trade for veteran help? You know, I feel like those are the two relevant questions. Either you're getting help for Dame immediately with the pick, or you're getting help for Dame immediately by trading the pick, because if it's not one of those two things, I don't know what you are next season, in which case I have to wonder again about whether Dame himself is going. So what does the seventh pick do for them, Jeremy?
Yeah, we're on the same page here. Like, Portland was one of the teams that I really didn't know what to make of, and I was like, I hope they don't win the lottery because I don't know what I'm gonna, you know, say about them if they do. Like, that would have been a really weird situation, just because like they are kind of stuck in between two phases where it seems like Dame wants to be there and he kind of has them by the balls, where it's like until he says he wants out, like they can't really, you know, rebuild. Although I think trading CJ obviously was like a hint, like, hey, maybe we know that this might need to happen, but. Yeah, I would expect, you know, there was chatter some time ago that they were going to try to do something with the picks. And then they thought, you know, they thought they were going to have two lottery picks until New Orleans made the playoff. So then that pick went to Charlotte, the 15th pick, and Portland was left with one. So, you know, I do think that pick can get you something because it's in that tier of players where, you know, you'll get someone you feel good about, you know, whether it's, you know, Benedict Mathurin, Dyson Daniels, Johnny Davis. Those are, you know, three guys who I think will go in that range. I really like Jeremy Sochan. You know, those are probably the four players who I'm interested in that range of the draft. So, you know, knowing that you can pick from among those guys, you know, potentially maybe someone falls you don't expect. You know, I would think that there will be some type of market for that pick. I don't know exactly what they'd go get, but I do think that they're in a tough position having to straddle, like, you know, Dame wanting to win now. And again, knowing that even if you try as hard as you can to win now, you're probably not building a contender around him in a year. Also hoping that he's healthy, right? And it's like, the risk of going all in for Portland is that, you know, it doesn't work out and you're a 500 team at the deadline. It's like, gosh, shit. Like, should we trade him now and just deal with it? Like, arguably should have done it a year ago. But he does seem to have so much power over what happens that it's hard for me to see them just going like fully young, right? So, like, Keegan Murray would have been a good fit there, but I don't think he's going to be there at seven. So, it's tough.
I also just don't, no matter what they do, Jeremy, I don't know how the Blazers rebound that quickly in a Western Conference where. I know this wasn't like the toughest year for the West, but a lot of that had to do with injuries and everything. So Denver gets healthy, presumably. The Clippers get healthy, presumably. The Lakers maybe figure out, at least, you know, they can't be worse than they were, I don't think. A healthy LeBron and Anthony Davis and whatever they do with Westbrook. Like, it's not getting any easier. I'm not even sure I can see a path for the Blazers back to the playoffs, maybe not even the play-in. And that's with all due respect to Dame, who's amazing. But like, they're in a really weird spot. And the West is definitely going to be tougher next season. Let's finish off with the Knicks. They don't move up. They never move up. Poor Knicks fans, waiting for that one miracle. So they're sitting there at 11th. Their record of drafting in the lottery is eh. I just wonder, so you said this draft class, you saw it as deep as maybe 10 or 11 players. So that seems like they are right on the edge of whether you're getting an impactful player. What's their hope at 11, you think?
Yeah. I think they'd probably like it if, one of those guards kind of like fell out of the top 10. Realistically, if that doesn't happen, I think they have to at least think about, I don't know what happens with Mitchell Robinson in terms of if they re-up him or not. But is it worth, taking a guy like Jalen Duren from Memphis or Mark Williams from Duke and just get younger up front and like add a piece, a center, to develop, the Knicks are kind of stuck in the middle where they had the sort of misfortune of being kind of good a year ago. And then everybody thought they had to be good now. And then clearly they're not going to be, what happens with Julius Randle? We don't know. They're another one of those teams where it's so hard to operate out of that middle where it's like, yeah, we could try to make the playoffs, but like, are we really going to do it? The two bigs or one of those bigs is kind of what I'm looking at. I mean, maybe AJ Griffin falls there, who some people are excited about. I am less excited about as a prospect. He's a really good shooter at his age with, some upside if he kind of gets some of his athleticism back. He's been injured a little bit. There will be names there that will be, picks that you can spin to the fan base and they should be like, okay with. Maybe the Knicks are a team. Hey, maybe they're a team that wants to trade up Portland to 7 and get a better player. Like, I don't know. But they're a team that will probably need to get creative if they want to, make a leap towards the playoffs next year. So this pick will at least, it could be currency to do that. So we'll see.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff, Jeremy. I know you need to get over to the combine, back over to the gym. Everybody find his latest mock draft on SI.com and all coverage between now and the draft over the next couple of months. Always great stuff. Jeremy, thanks for the insights. Appreciate it. Enjoy your walk.
I will. It's nice weather today. It was raining the other day. So. I'll take it. Thanks, Howard.
Excellent. All right. Take care. Okay, that's it for today's show. My thanks again to Jeremy Wu. Thank you to our producer, Shelby Royston. Thank you all for listening. Remember, you can hear Chris Mannix and me every Tuesday on The Crossover with all the latest NBA chatter. And then on Fridays, it's me and a guest. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to The Crossover wherever you get your podcasts. And hit me with all your feedback on Twitter at Howard Beck.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.